Ryanair flies into turbulence over a shortage of pilots, forcing the cancellation of hundreds of flights. Has Europe got Ireland's corporation tax regime as its sights as it attempts to tax turnover, not profits? And Vidal is back this week. What to expect as we head into Budget 2018? I'm Ian Guider, and you're welcome to The Post Podcast. Lots to discuss this week as we discuss a new Dáil term. Former Labour leader Pat Rabbit is going to be with us, as is our political editor telling you everything you need to watch out. And we're also going to be discussing Ireland's corporation tax regime. It's in focus once again. Now, Ryanair is finding itself at the centre of a storm. It's cancelling hundreds of flights over the next couple of weeks in what it says is a mess up over the holidays due to its pilots. But has the airline, which has spent the last number of years attempting to improve its customer service image, done lasting damage? Michael O'Leary calls it a mess up, but can it recover? Ian Keogh, editor of the Sunday Business Post, is with me. Ian, I'm a huge fan of Michael O'Leary. I think he's generated an enormous amount of wealth for shareholders. He has built this huge international business. Has he undone all of that with a simple mess up?
Well, I mean, Ryanair has always been the master of reinvention. It went from being a cold-hearted airline to trying to be more touchy-feely in response to, you know, competition from other low-cost airlines. I mean, what's gone on in the last couple of days, both at a very serious level over just what is going on with their pilots, but also from a messaging level, has just been an absolute omni-shambles. I mean, if you think about it, you know, we always hold up Ryanair as this is a really well-run company. And if you talk to taxi drivers or anyone else, they always say, put Michael O'Leary in charge of the Department of Finance.
Put him in his T-shirt.
Put him in his charge of, you know, Bus Éireann. He'll sort them out. Of CIE, he'll sort that out. Could you imagine the public outrage that would be going on right now if Irish Rail or Bus Éireann had come out and said, you know what, we're going to cancel 2,100, you know, flights or bus trips or train trips over 6 weeks. And for a period, we're not even going to tell you which ones they are. And I think this is where Ryanair has really got themselves into trouble. It's, you know, day five of a crisis. They're now only giving some sort of guidance on which flights are coming out. We're still, despite what Ryanair is not saying, and analysts are still unsure, just what's really behind all of this? Is it the fact, and maybe you have a view on this, is it as simple as we got the rostering wrong? We went from a 12-month period that started in April or wherever to a calendar year, and as a result, the pilots are getting all this time off? Or is it as Norwegian airliners saying, we're hiring all their pilots? Nobody seems to know.
Yeah, and I'm kind of wondering as well, if you look at the size of Ryanair, it's got more than 10,000 employees, including pilots and cabin crew, how just a couple of hundred pilots owed a few weeks' holiday could destroy an entire couple of weeks of the airline's operations. And you're kind of looking at the last couple of weeks. We've seen the share price. It fell on Monday. It's recovered a little bit. But last week in particular, it was down after a ruling by the European courts, which Ryanair tried to spin one way. And I'm wondering if there's something more fundamental at issue here with the airline and with Michael O'Leary.
Well, there's a couple of things that this is really thrown out, and they're all going to have to be addressed. You know, when people get back on flights and they get themselves, there's issues here they need to be looked at. I think number one is, what sort of a system do they have in place for managing flight disruptions? On the basis of what's gone on the last couple of days, that system is flimsy at best and possibly even non-existent. Listening to Michael O'Leary's press conference yesterday, it was, one would imagine it was himself and a couple of guys looking over boards and almost, you know, pinning the tail on the donkey for which flights they were going to cancel. They weren't sure. Number two, you know, Ryanair has pulled costs out. That's admirable because it's allowed them to reduce the price of flying, and it's opened up the skies to people who could never do that before. But at what point is become too much? The tightening of crewing schedules and, you know, running their pilots so close to the regulated limits has consequences, and it has consequences when you just push it a tiny little bit too far. And you have to wonder, have they pushed it a tiny little bit too far in this case?
Yeah, and you look at the actual cost of the airline. Michael O'Leary in that press conference said, look, it's going to cost us about 25 million quid. That's what it will cost you for compensation. But the bigger issue is, what is going to happen to people who might want to make a booking?
Well, you see, this is the thing. You know, 25 million, it's an awful lot of money to an awful lot of companies, but it's not to Ryanair.
It's tiny, a billion and a half profit.
2% of their profits are less. They'll get over that. Shareholders will deal with that. It's having gone to so much effort to rebuild their corporate reputation, to recalibrate their corporate reputation.
Over many years, because this is not something that started 6 months ago. This is something from several years ago when the airline realised we have an image problem.
Yeah. And so having gone to all of that, I mean, you look at Michael O'Leary, Sky are running live press conferences. You know, they're going through tweets of people being stranded from Krakow to Dublin to London. This is a public relations disaster. And Michael O'Leary's a great guy for telling a story. And, you know, it's one of the cornerstones of Ryanair's success. But he can't talk his way out of this one. He was asked him about shareholder value and he made the point, well, I'm the largest shareholder and it doesn't matter. What we need to do is to get these things back up and running. They need to answer the fundamental questions. Is there a more fundamental problem with Ryanair? But also is to try and rebuild trust with their customers.
Something I'd be worried about is Ryanair have said, look, we have plans to grow to about 130 million people per year over the next couple of years. If you cannot get your rosters right now, when you're not near that level, what are you going to do when all these Boeing 737s start landing in airports around Europe? How are you going to manage the rosters and that increase in capacity?
Well, I would have thought, and I just, you know, you never think about these things, but I would have thought there was some sort of IT system within Ryanair that rostered pilots. And 6 to 8 months ago, if an issue was emerging, red lights would start going off in Ryanair HQ that says, we have a problem coming. It seems nobody noticed that they wouldn't have enough pilots to fly all of the planes. And if they did, they kept it to themselves, or Ryanair decided to do very little about it.
Something in previous years which Ryanair would have banked on is, look, this generates a problem right now, but it is loads of free publicity. And once people go onto the website and see the fares for $19.99 compared to Aer Lingus and BA ripping you off, gouging you, that'll be the end of it. Has that now been one of those things that's been disproven?
People don't care anymore. You keep on hearing that phrase of all publicity is good publicity. All publicity is good publicity until you see families stranded off in Krakow, not being able to get back because they don't, and other people stranded at airports not knowing if their flight is going to be going off. All publicity is good publicity until such time as a family is left in the middle of nowhere trying to get home.
Do we have questions here for the aviation regulator as well as to whether it knew what was going on and as whether it gave its approval for this?
I think, let's deal with Ryanair first, but I think at some point we need to start looking at what is the scope and scale of the aviation regulator in this country? Is it just to come out and say people are getting compensation? Or is it to go in and audit airlines? And not just Ryanair, but there's an awful lot of airlines with Irish bases, as we know, and they all have substantial operations. Are they in a position to fulfil their, you know, their promises to customers? I don't know, Ian. I mean, where do you think it'll lead for them?
I think one of the issues for Ryanair is, look, shareholders will want to know what's been going on the last couple of weeks. We've seen various reversals on baggage in terms of how many you can carry on. They'll want to know, look, is this plan you have to get better? Is it actually working? Or are you just saying, look, this is the plan, rather than really delivering value to customers and shareholders? But the issue here is Michael O'Leary's style. Is he a good man for a crisis like this? Or does the flippant, I'm the largest shareholder, it doesn't bother me. Is Michael O'Leary now going to be the problem?
And where do you think Norwegian fits into all of this? I mean, they were quick out of the blocks yesterday to say, oh, we've taken 170 pilots now. Ryanair said, oh, it's less than 100. Either which way, it's a large number. They're pumping hundreds of millions of euro into their Irish operation. They're holding companies and they're routing more flights.
Yeah, Norwegian wants to be the Ryanair of long-haul passage. They're saying, look, we can fly to the US for very cheap amounts of money. We're doing it through Dublin. We're doing it through Cork. I suppose Norwegian never let a chance to do down a competitor in a PR crisis, but you kind of wonder if that's a side issue. I think this is something Ryanair has to address. Is it growing too quickly, and does it have the capacity in place and the systems in place to deal with that?
Well, I think one way or the other, if they don't get the communications right over the next couple of days, if they don't start engaging on a more serious level with people who've been stranded and people who are not sure if their flights are going off, you know, you can have 1999 flights going everywhere, but if people don't trust the airline that they'll be able to get that flight, that's a material impact to the bottom line.
Okay, Ian Keogh, editor of the Sunday Business Post, thank you very much. Now it is time to talk politics. The Dáil is back after a, well, a lengthy enough holiday for most people, I'd say. Time to discuss it with our political editor, Michael Brennan, and Pat Rabbit, former Labour leader, former minister and columnist with the Sunday Business Post. We've sent Hugh O'Connell off down to the ploughing. He's off down wearing his suit and fancy shoes, so we'll see how he gets on next week. But a lot in front of the Dáil this week. Gentlemen, it's been a longish summer. We've had a few controversies spring up with the Garda Commissioner and water charges and housing. What will you be expecting will be the big themes over the next couple of weeks?
Well, actually, all the issues that you refer to are there, but it has been a quiet enough. It's been a quiet enough period, really. You know, there hasn't been as much angst in the political scene as, for example, you would have had in the corresponding time last year. The government and the Taoiseach have certainly got a break in terms of the departure of the Garda Commissioner, because that's one issue that's not going to go away. And the other issue, of course, the big issue that isn't going to go away is the housing issue and access to affordable housing, and why all of the plans haven't yet started to produce significant numbers of houses. That's going to do is going to erode the standing of government over the coming 6 months, in my opinion, unless it is seen that there are actions underway that are going to deliver this time. The other issue, I suppose, that will be more problematic than seems to be the mood out there, and that's the referendum on abortion. People are drawing false equivalences between the outcome of the marriage equality referendum, for example, as a barometer of public opinion, and that therefore there will be a very liberal result automatically in the case of the abortion referendum. I don't think it's that clear cut at all, and I think it will be quite difficult, and I think, you know, a lot of kind of fundamentalist groups will make a last stand on it. So, you know, there are problems out there: housing, health, reform of the Gardaí, the referendum. Because it's very difficult to make a comment, I find it difficult to make a comment on the new Taoiseach, for example, although it's 100 days on Thursday, because not much, there isn't much really either to criticise him or to praise him. I thought he was astute in the two speeches that he made immediately before the holiday period on Brexit. I thought they were well judged. But other than that, it's been routine stuff, you know. God help us, turn up at the All-Ireland final, another one that Mayo left behind them. But they are routine duties of a Taoiseach.
Michael, it almost feels that we haven't really had, I suppose, even much talk about the budget, which is only about 3 weeks away at this stage. I mean, has this been deliberate policy by the new administration, or are things now, reality is going to creep up on them, in which you have, as Pat said, big social issues and also a budget as well?
I think they've made a lot of effort to keep the focus positive, to do the right things.
Leo Socks and various other things.
I was at an event on Saturday, Castleknock GA Club in Dublin, were opening a new dressing room complex or turning the sod, and Leo was there as the local TD, and he joked that he was becoming not very good at Gaelic football in school, but he was becoming a sort of an All-Ireland champion at sod turning, and give Bertie and Enda a run for their money there. So he's had a lot of those nice events to do, meetings with the Canadian Prime Minister. But the housing issue, I think, is the big one. Pat mentioned it. You've heard some very confused thinking about NAMA. NAMA could somehow, it's already promised to build 20,000 houses. I think it's only delivered 4,000. Now NAMA could be the solution in another way, whereas a lot of people would say that the way NAMA operated contributed to the problem in the first place. So we'd like to see some more detail on that. But I was at the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party meeting yesterday in Longford, and their firm belief among TDs is give Leo another year and the shine will come off, especially in terms of health and housing. So that's their strategy at the moment.
Pat, when you look at the two big issues, as you said, housing and health, they seem just so enormous, Pat. A year to fix them, I mean, surely no government could.
No, you can't go down to the local supermarket and buy a housing estate. It takes time. And, you know, even in circumstances where builders are back on the scene, you know, finance, access to finance seems to be very measured on the part of the banking institutions. And there's no doubt, I mean, you know, the builders have been jockeying for price advantage in terms of margins being adequate and all that kind of stuff.
It's in their own advantage. They want to get out of NAMA. They want to come out with as much money as possible.
It is. It is. That, and that's being acted out. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And then you have the kind of, you know, situation that Matt Cooper wrote about in the Sunday Business Post last week, relating to the question of the financial engineering that some of the developers are involved in terms of assembling a land bank and doing remarkably well from it, but
not
there are
building
no
a
houses.
Single house, yeah.
There are no houses, you know, and that's a huge challenge for the and you know things that pop up from time to time as possible partial answers turn out to be without foundation. You know, if you take, for example, the question of vacant houses, you know, Conor Skeen, for example, who has studied this subject and all the rest, and he's chairman of the Housing Agency, you know, he has been advocating for so long now. There's more than 200,000 vacant houses in the country, and if we took X of them into to rehabilitate them, it would take so many people. And then you have the Taoiseach saying, well, we've looked at that and it's not what we thought it was, and we've sent the local authorities out knocking on the doors, and there's a story behind each vacant house, and it's not going to make such a big contribution, and so on. So you know, we have had now since 2014 you know, various proposals and all the rest that haven't quite delivered and haven't quite, you know, delivered on the promise that seemed to be there inherent in the proposal.
Is it possible in government to focus on just one issue? And it is a domestic issue when you have so many other things going on externally, Brexit. We also have, as we talked about, a land grab on taxation as well. Is it possible for government to deliver on an issue when you've got so many other things competing for time?
Well, it's demanding, but it is the job of the Taoiseach really to dictate the priorities. I mean, his predecessor was very good at using the instrument of the Cabinet Subcommittee. Every first Monday of the month, well, don't hold me to the first Monday or second Monday, I can't remember, but he would have no fewer than six Cabinet Subcommittees. You know, starting at 8 o'clock in the morning and running until 8 o'clock at night if necessary. And they were able to focus on and kick around the differences and the angles and hear from experts and all that kind of thing. And yeah, it is true that, you know, there's a busy agenda there between Brexit and Northern Ireland and the issues we have discussed and so on. But in terms of where the shoe pinches, to have the advocacy agencies being rolled out on Morning Ireland every third morning of the week for the next 6 months until spring, early summer comes again, about hard, tough luck stories on housing is very politically eroding.
Michael Fianna Fáil, thinking this week you were at it, how disappointed will they have been with the showing in the Sunday Times poll?
Well, the answer of Micheál Martin is, of course, he doesn't care about
the only poll that matters is
yes,
the one.
The
yes,
polls
yes.
have got it wrong before and so on. But speaking to his backbenchers, as he would know well, they're very concerned about polls. They, you know, one or two polls isn't going to rock them that much. But, you know, the problem will be there for Micheál Martin in, say, a year's time if Fianna Fáil are still behind the new Leo Varadkar-led Fine Gael. That will be an issue for them. Just to pick up on, you know, something Pat was saying in terms of trying to focus government priorities, I think one problem we've seen the current government is what you could call action planitis, where they're trying to deal with several problems at the moment. They have an action plan for education, there's still one for rural Ireland. And what we're seeing is when Pat was in government, she had mainly the action plan for jobs. It worked quite well in a lot of ways. Now every problem has an action plan, including housing. And what you're seeing is a lot of more waffle in the plans. Stuff is being progressed, being implemented.
Meeting arbitrary targets.
Yes. And I think that's a sign that if you spread your net too widely, you mightn't catch too many fish. So they will, you know, have to concentrate on those few key issues rather than trying to effectively say we can solve everything and concentrate all our energies in many areas.
Are we heading for a row over the budget where one is not necessary? We know how much money is available. It's very little. They haven't found anything down the back of the sofa over the summer. So why are we heading for a budget row, splitting hairs over what end of taxation you cut?
I think it's a tactical move by Fianna Fáil in some way. They're correct in saying they want to cut the universal social charge. That's in the conference and supply agreement, and they're correct in that. But they are arguing, of course, yesterday, our proposal is fairer. Leo Varadkar, that Tory-esque leader, wants to give more tax cuts to the wealthier people, and therefore the row over USC cuts versus increasing the income tax bands is really a row over. We are the fair party. Leo is that Thatcherite, Toryite type leader. And that I think that it's going to be played out in those terms.
Isn't that just masking that even though the economy is roaring ahead, the ability, the fiscal headroom is just not there?
It's not there. And you certainly can't both have some modest reduction in USC and alter the tax bands. You won't be able to do both. The money isn't there. And even if you were to play games with the expectation that October and November will be more bountiful in terms of tax returns, there's still little enough there. And, there is an expectation out there, and the government itself, has to take some responsibility for that expectation, because people have endured very modest or no pay increases since the crash. And that's unprecedented in Ireland. We got accustomed to, whether or not we ought to have got accustomed to, is another question, to regular pay increases of some substance and so on. And, if you accept that, I don't know what the figure is now, but it's around 30%. Who are not liable to taxation at all for a variety of reasons, and some of them may be liable to a very minor USC payment. Then it's that next band of people on what are really modest enough incomes and who go into a high rate of tax very early on. And expectations have been built up there, and the pay increases have been very moderate. So here you have the conflict for the man on the bar stool of the economy apparently roaring ahead, cranes all over Dublin again, albeit building office blocks and so on, not much relief in sight. And of course for young people, including young professionals getting off the ground and having to pay Dublin rents or Galway rents, it's pretty tough. And normally when the economy is going well, a government does well from it. But here we have the economy going well and a lot of people under a good deal of pressure.
And you have, I suppose, it's exactly true. I think the issue that sort of kept the Fianna Fáil-led government popular for a long time during the boom was the property boom made a lot of people feel wealthy. They felt their house price was going up. There were people excluded, but a lot of people felt good about it. They were buying second properties and third and fourth and fifth with cheap bank loans. That isn't happening, obviously, for obvious reasons. We've learned from our mistakes, but there isn't that widespread sense. And definitely, as Pat is saying, young professionals, very difficult market for them. And that's where the housing will hit the government, not so much on the social housing, which is maybe 15% of the population, but especially on the issue of people feel locked out, rents hiking up, that effectively is the whole population.
Do you think in this Dáil term we will see a bit more of an angry Dáil, where people are taking their positions with an eye to an election that may come at any time?
Well, to be honest, I don't think
the
Dáil is short of anger, and it's not short of grandstanding and play acting. I mean, I think you're looking at a situation where, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil returning almost 50% in a general election, that could well, as the economy roars ahead, That could well go to about 60% in a general election. But the remaining 40% is hopelessly fragmented. And I think the one thing that you won't be short from that 40% is anger. But anger is not a policy. You know, it's not going to produce houses or more hospital beds. So, you know, I think the play is, you know, would Fianna Fáil in any circumstances pull the plug? I think it would have to be one hell of a big, manifest, obvious reason, because I think there is a different objective as between the leader of the party, Micheál Martin, and his front bench. His front bench largely haven't had an opportunity to serve in government. They're getting very restless. Micheál was there for all of the years, including coming up to the crash. And miraculously, Fianna Fáil have to some degree bounced back. And he will have one shot at becoming Taoiseach. And he's playing it very cautiously about how that's going to happen. On the other hand, I think that Fine Gael have been looking at what happened to Theresa May. And I think the notion of you going to the country just because you feel like it or because you got a good opinion poll, I think Fine Gael won't do that. So therefore, I think we're going to be around for a little bit longer than I would have said a year ago. You know, in those circumstances, it's a huge challenge for not just the citizens and the voters, but for the organs of public discourse. Do we want more of the same? The height of Fianna Fáil ambition is to replace Fine Gael in a similar arrangement. And, you know, quite honestly, I think that's bad for the country, because I think this type of government, I'm not, and I never have been, a new politics advocate. I think this type of government is paralysed. It can only do the easy things, the things that, you know, are popular or have to be done. But the big things are being postponed. And we may survive that for the duration of this government. But if we had another government led by either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael that had to go cap in hand to every Tom, Dick and Harry to get approval for any measure, you know, I personally think that's just bad for the country.
Okay, on that note, Pat Rabbit and Michael Brennan, thank you very much for joining us. We're back in just a moment.
For the best analysis, the best writing and the best commentary, don't miss Post Plus, a new weekly section with the Sunday Business Post, featuring in-depth interviews, profiles and opinion on the issues that matter, with a pull-out money section containing investment tips, market analysis and personal finance advice. Post Plus, only with this weekend's Sunday Business Post.
Now it's time to talk taxation, and is Ireland's corporation tax regime in the sight of European Union leaders? Because proposals are going to be tabled in the next couple of days about how to tax internet giants such as Facebook, Google and Apple, and the Irish government as well defending its corner with a recent report by economist Seamus Coffey giving the Irish tax regime a clean bill of health. Well, what to watch out for? I'm joined by Dr. Brian Keegan of Chartered Accountants Ireland and of course a columnist for the Sunday Business Post. Brian, Dr. Brian Keegan, you're most welcome to Business Post HQ.
Thanks indeed, Ian. Nice to be here.
We've seen lots of moves in recent days from Europe around corporation tax, digital taxation. What exactly are they looking at here?
It's really very hard to know. It's like the old song says, you know, if they won't take care of us, why can't they just let us be? We've had a situation where for years and years we've been attacked on the basis of the headline 12.5% corporation tax rate, which has served to drive foreign direct investment into this country, no doubt. Its sternest critics are those countries which compete the hardest with us for that kind of foreign direct investment. It was back on the table again with Seamus Coffey's excellent report earlier on this week. But coming out of left field is the news from ECOFIN that a number of the ECOFIN finance ministers, that's the European group of finance ministers, are looking at a new equalisation levy. they're calling it, in some way to sort of accelerate this whole process of global tax reform and make sure they're getting more cash into their coffers from the multinationals. But the key thing about this one is, this is, there's nothing new in heaven and earth. I mean, the Americans have been looking at this idea for years, but it's something totally different to other European initiatives like the CCCTB, like the kind of stuff the James Coffey Report was designed to tackle. This would actually end up, in my estimation, Ian, being a tax not on corporates, but on consumers.
Yeah, because what they want to do is to tax, and I saw this last week and I was a little bit astonished, they want to tax the turnover of big corporations. They want to tax you. So if I'm Amazon, if I'm Google or Facebook, and if I sell €1 billion worth of goods in Germany, instead of taxing me on my profits, which may be taxed somewhere else because that's where the economic activity is, to tax me on my turnover.
Yeah, I think the best way to look at this tax, or to try and understand and get your head around it, is to think of it in terms of like being like excise duty. If you buy a bottle of whiskey coming in from Scotland, you're going to pay excise duty on that as a consumer. It's a fixed levy on the goods that are sold to you in Ireland. And in a sense, it's a way of the Irish revenue ensuring that they get a slice of commercial activity in Scotland. This equalisation tax, something like that, what they're saying is that if you order a product or a service online and the company doesn't actually have a presence already in the country where the customer is, that there'll be some kind of a levy, like an excise levy, attached to the price the customer pays. The downside of that is that even though it's designed to ensure the corporations ultimately pay more taxes, actually the customers that will feel the brunt of it. And one of the real snags that they have is the much vaunted state aid, which brings us back full circle to Apple again. Because under European Union rules, you cannot treat a foreign company different to one of your own companies. So, say if Germany was putting in this equalisation tax, it would have to tax a company in the Ruhr in exactly the same way as imports coming in from Ireland.
Yeah, and you can imagine that somebody like a Siemens would say, well, why should I face a tax of 2 to 5% just because you want to get Amazon or Facebook in your sights?
Exactly. Now, the attraction for European finance ministers is this is something that they can do within their own finance acts in the same way as we were able to do something like a domicile levy to try and catch individuals a few years back. They don't need EU permission to do it. But they do need EU permission to do it in such a way that it doesn't contravene the EU state aid rules. And it's very hard to see how that might actually work in practice. And I think that's why this came to ECOFIN. It was to allow the finance ministers it was initiated by France, Germany, Italy and Spain, to run the idea up the flagpole, see what the other finance ministers thought. And if it was going to fly, well, then they could look at how it would fit in the overall state aid context.
Do we not have a veto on taxation matters? Can Pascal Donoghue or Taoiseach Leo Varadkar not turn up at an EU summit and say, no, we are not going to accept this, and that's the end of it?
Yes, we do. We've a veto on EU-wide taxation matters. We don't have a veto on the taxation matters in another country. So if Germany wanted unilaterally to apply this kind of turnover tax, it could do it. We wouldn't have a veto on that. However, if the European Commission put forward a proposal whereby all of the 28, soon to be 27 EU member states were to adopt this kind of tax, we would have a veto on that.
Is there a sense that they are running this up the flagpole so that they can really get what they want through, what they've been looking for years, is this common, consolidated, combined corporation tax base? I know I've got it wrong there, but who knows these acronyms, that they really want to try and get this through the OECD and also through the European Commission?
That's always a possibility. And if they were actually trying to do that in a strange kind of way, they'd be mirroring what has been happening across the Atlantic. Because something very similar to this equalisation levy, which was a border adjustment tax, was mooted by the Republicans in the context of an overall tax package. That seems to have been quietly dropped, the focus now being on rates. And, you know, it's entirely possible that this is happening in the EU context again. How far it's going to go remains to be seen. But I think if consumers in the different countries realise they are actually going to be the ones who will bear the cost of this rather than the corporates, I think you could see finance ministers backing off from it very, very quickly. The OECD themselves are dead against this. And very unusually, Pascal Sanaman, who's the head of the OECD tax division, came out remarkably quickly and said, you know, this is cutting across everything we're trying to do at OECD level to try and straighten out the international corporation tax system. And really, lads, you should really think again about this.
Do you get a sense that something is building here against, and they are particularly American multinationals? We had the report coming out from this European parliamentary group looking at Google and looking at Facebook rooting all their sales, or pretty much all their sales, their advertising sales, through Ireland, and saving up to around $5.5 billion from taxation they could have paid in other countries. Is there just a general movement now in Europe? Look, we see all this money. We've had years of austerity. We want some of this tax.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think it's a movement that's been kicking around since at least 2011, 2012. And it hasn't really lost that much momentum. The underlying difficulty is that we're dealing in a modern economy with a corporation tax system that was designed 100 years ago. And it's just not able to cope with the kind of cross-border transactions that take place on a routine basis. And it's not able to cope with actually assigning where profits should appropriately be taxed. And what's actually happening now is that there are various attempts, it's almost like flailing around, trying to figure out what's the best way to end up doing these things. Harmonisation in the EU context is actually a good idea, as long as you harmonise the population in different countries, you harmonise the individual natural resources that are available, you give us the same weather as enjoyed in France and Spain so we can boost our tourism industry. The reason there is a disparity in corporation tax codes is that there is a disparity in economic circumstances of the countries that apply them. And a corporation tax code that makes perfect sense in France or Germany will not translate to a country like Ireland, which is an awful lot smaller, has a much smaller market, and has much fewer natural resources. And until that particular coin drops, the only way you can describe these attempts at corporation tax reform is as a tax grab. It's not about generating more tax from the multinationals, it's about displacing where they pay, away from the likes of Ireland and into mainland Europe.
We have given ourselves, through Seamus Coffey, the chairman of the Fiscal Advisory Council, a very respected economist, we have given ourselves a clean bit of health on our taxation system. But people will look at, well, hang on a moment, there's the Apple ruling out there that €13 billion was given to Apple effectively through state aid.
Yeah, well, that one's under dispute, so I'm not going to necessarily agree with that particular analysis of it. I mean, there's one reference only in Coffey's report to the Apple ruling, and it comes in a footnote. It was part of the context, it's not part of the substance, because the Apple case, Ian, is not a tax case. It is a state aid case. It's all about whether a sovereign nation, Ireland, gave an advantage to a particular company that wasn't generally available. And that's not to do with tax. It just so happens that the advantage was given by tax means, according to the Commission. And that's the nexus of the argument against the finding of the Commission. So they're actually separate issues. Now, did Coffey give us a clean bill of health? He did. He gave us a qualified clean bill of health. He said we're not doing too badly in terms of modernisation of our corporation tax system. I think that's a fair comment. He looked at whether or not corporation tax receipts were sustainable. He drew particular conclusions. I think that's probably, by and large, fair comment as well, though he argues for an increase, actually, in the taxation of multinationals. Where I think the report goes slightly askew is where he's looking at how indigenous companies should be taxed. And really what he's proposing in terms of the treatment of indigenous companies, the treatment of indigenous company structures, it's probably overkill. It's going to create an awful lot of administration without generating an awful lot of money, and really stretching revenue's own resources for very, very little return.
Brian, you and I were much younger when we started talking about reform of European taxation.
But we're better looking now, so that's okay.
Will this come to anything at all, or is this one of your regular, let's try it on by France and Germany, let's see where we get, and eventually it comes to nothing?
Tax is a democratic process. It is fundamental to the political process. It's all about debate. We've been engaging avidly in the debate, certainly since 2004, 2005, possibly even earlier than that. There have been changes. A lot of those changes have been to the good. I mean, one of the points that's often overlooked in the context of the reforms that have taken place over the last decade is that the net effect on Ireland's corporation tax yield has gone up, and has gone up in a sustainable fashion. So a lot of this debate is positive. What we need to guard against all the time are the loopier notions, the ones that are really, as I mentioned earlier, all about taking tax from one small island nation like ourselves and pushing it into Central Europe. And we are fully entitled to defend our tax sovereignty as far as that goes. In terms, though, of cooperating with other countries, making sure that tax doesn't fall completely out of assessment, making sure that there aren't outrageously low amounts paid by very profitable businesses, we all have, as an international community, some role in that. Part of the Coffey report we discussed earlier was about strengthening the kind of cooperation we do. That's all to the good. But this debate, Ian, is just going to roll on and roll on and roll on. And ultimately, ultimately there will be harmonisation, but as I say, it's a long, long way away.
Yep, I'll sacrifice some corporation tax regimes for better wine and certainly better weather. Dr. Brian Keegan of Chartered Accountants Ireland and, of course, columnist with the Sunday Business Post, thank you very much for joining us. And that's all we have time for in the Post podcast this week. More business news and analysis online on businesspost.ie. We're back next week.